to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 114 with Mitch Weathers. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Mitch Weathers, we explore a number of interesting topics like it's not about me, it's about mindset. Multiply the I can't believe what I'm seeing culture, how Organized Binder works and why your students should use it, and deficit versus asset lenses. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the content, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Mitch Weathers is a high school teacher, adjunct college professor, and the creator and founder of Organized Binder. Mitch designed Organized Binder to help struggling students gain daily exposure to the non-cognitive skills and executive function needed to achieve in the classroom. Together with the Organized Binder team, he now helps teachers, schools, districts, and colleges implement the various versions of the system both nationally and internationally. Universities such as Stanford and Dominican University invite him to work with teacher candidates, and he works with the new teacher support programs, TIPS, and BTSA, to help beginning teachers adopt the system. Mitch speaks nationally at conferences like CTA, CLS, and NSTA. He also formally advises a number of education technology companies and startups. Right, well, welcome to the show, Mitch Weathers.
Thank you for having me.
Man, it's a pleasure. You know, we connected on the phone. I don't even remember who connected us, but I'm thankful that they did. And maybe you were just reaching out over email or something. Long story short, we connected on the phone. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I love the work you're doing. So we'll dig into Organized Binder in a bit. But just curious, Mitch, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
First of all, thanks for having me. I'm super honored to be on and talking with you again, Daniel. Career in education, I actually started off in the nonprofit space working with adolescents, middle school and high school students. And after leaving that, was just missing being around young people. And I was looking for a little more definition as well. I was an executive director of a nonprofit and was just looking for a similar experience with young people, but just resonated with the academic setting. And again, a little more definition. So headed back to graduate school, I'm a science major, and wanted to be a high school science teacher, work with the same population, and it worked out. So that's what I'm doing.
What was it about science that drew you in?
That's a great question. That gets to speaking of my bio a little bit. You know, as we get into this Organized Binder work, I was a student or a young person growing up that I never felt confident in the classroom per se. And it didn't feel, I guess, quote unquote, smart or like one of the smart kids. I always got through, but I wouldn't say that school or the classroom was a comfortable space for me. And I enjoyed, it's really funny, I grew up in California and I loved going up to the Sierra Nevada. And I loved being around all the granite and the rocks and just being outside. And as I got through K-12, and it's like, well, what do you do next? You guess you keep going. I didn't have a trade under my belt. I didn't really have that direction. I was a soccer player. I got hurt. That didn't work out. And so I signed up for community college and started my way through there. And after about 3 years there, had to pick a major. and just chose geology because I loved being outside and I was looking at the course options. And it's really funny. It's this ends up being this really rigorous major. And I'm going at it the whole time. People, what are you going to do? What are you going to do after the major? And I'm going to teach high school science. You know, and they're like, you chose this major to be a science teacher? Like, you could get there other, you know, there's a lot of other routes.
Yeah.
And I ended up loving the major. And it was kind of like in my back pocket, man, to be honest. I was like, well, if I ever do need like a job, you know, like a career with health benefits and everything, this is, you know, when I'm 20 years old. I'll be this science teacher. And it's been pretty funny. So I graduate, I go into this nonprofit work and I do that for a number of years, go back to graduate school and do my credential and master's and eventually find myself in the classroom. So as an educator, I absolutely love teaching science because kind of that same spirit of what inspired me as a person and leveraging that in the classroom is powerful.
Love that story, you know, and I connect with it in a number of ways because geology was a great interest of mine too. I was terrible at chemistry, terrible at physics, biology. and, you know, I just love being outside as well. And I remember in college intentionally, even though I was a math major, taking a geology course and we went out to somewhere in Missouri. Maybe it was called Graniteville. I don't even remember, Lake of the Ozarks area, but they had this huge granite that was maybe like elephant granite or something. It was gigantic that you could climb around and jump on and jump off of. It was absolutely fantastic and breathtaking because you're so small compared to how large, you know. I've been to the Grand Canyon and looking at that stuff, you know, really, really inspires me. But then I realized, Mitch, even in college, I also sucked at geology. Or at least that's basically what my professor said through grading my field notes, which I poured my heart and soul into those. but maybe I made them a little too poetic, you know, as an English teacher. Sure. Went to learn to be a math teacher, turned to English teacher. So I think, more poetry and not enough geology. And
I love it.
Didn't work out so hot.
I got to say, I'm loving this interview because this is the first time I've actually talked about all of this in some type of, you know, interview context. So I appreciate that.
Well, that's great. You know, we aim to please here at Better Leaders, Better Schools. So this is good stuff. So Mitch, you know, how do you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
It's a fun question to ask or respond to as a classroom teacher. I'm also, I've chaired my department at my high school. I teach in Redwood City, California at Sequoia High School. I'm now part-time there. I have been for the last 3 years as I launched the organized binder work, but I'm still there vested. I'm still chairing my department. And then I think of my time as a director in the nonprofit area. And, you know, I think that one of the keys to leadership, or certainly my style, first is acknowledging that it's not ever going to be just about me. I could be the most charismatic, dynamic, or even talented leader. And with a healthy or aiming to be healthy, turned on, active, passionate community, then we can accomplish things. So, for example, as chairing my department as in the sciences at my school, one of the first things I realized is, you know, I got a bunch of really smart people. They're really passionate. They're working their brains out, but we're not connecting as a community. And so the first thing I did the year I became department chair, it's like 12 years ago now, were social gatherings where we have an event in the fall where we get together. We have a holiday dinner. We have a spring event and we have an end of the year barbecue that absolutely no work happening. We just get together and commune. As a family, as a science family, and it's really become the backbone of a department that can work well together, that likes being together. But when tasks or challenges come up, we can sit down as a community and work through them and know that we really are that. We are a science community, a science teacher community at the school. And that kind of body is first and not just me as the leader of that group of people, if you will.
And, you know, a lot of the guests end up being in the principal role. But I'm loving talking to you. And, you know, I wonder if you could speak from the department chair perspective and how you bring the team together. Because I remember being in the English department. Not going to name what school, but one school specifically, man, it was a gossipy political mess. Okay. And I did not envy at all, right, the person leading that department. So what do you do to build the type of culture in the micro level, right, in the departmental level that either department chair listeners can steal and apply to their school, or school leaders can take this micro example and then take it out building wide?
Yeah, a number of things. One that's real is kind of brass tacks, and for the record, English departments are always way more contentious than science, so I got a little bit of a head start there, at least from my experience. But just kind of a day-to-day is really being cognizant of pain points for each member of the department that may be relieved by something I can do. Now, I can't solve everything. I can't show up and be like, what are all your copies you need done for this month? Or something. It's gotta be realistic. But figuring out what those are for each person means having one-on-one conversations with them. So everything's not just at the department meeting, which means I'm walking around, I'm stopping by before school, I'm sending a text message, checking in via email, and just really trying to get a pulse on how's my community on an individual level. How are they doing? How healthy are they? To know how balanced they are. And really talking about some of this outside of the classroom. Like, what's going on with you? How are things at home? What's going on with your kids? What's going on with your health? And having those conversations and then really trying to figure out again, what can I do to really help them? And it might be something simple and little, but they just know that I'm there for them and know I have their back, but it's also sustainable for me. I've made the mistake of trying to do too much and then I'm completely buried and I can't actually do the job I want to do well for them. So one, they're getting to know them, and then providing experiences for us to connect as a community. And it's kind of interesting, as a science department, you know, science is really a department of many departments, meaning like many of small. We have a number of chemistry teachers, a number of physics teachers, a number of bio teachers, and then other subjects as well. And there's not always necessarily an overlap there in terms of content standards or strands. A little bit more now with Common Core and Next Generation. But one of the things that provides us is an opportunity when we are together in a work setting is talking about scientific learning, and what does it mean to learn in the classroom, and what are we developing as a community in our ninth grade classes that is going to come to fruition in 12th grade classes? And we're an IB school. And so what are we doing, you know, what are we doing here in ninth grade that we're all going to work on continuously in these 4 years? And so it brings us all together in a way. Like, this mission isn't just, oh, I teach earth science in ninth grade. It's this integrated approach. And we're constantly talking about that. Like, what does that look like? How do we know we're achieving it? What do we need to tweak? So those are some of the things I think help build the community that I'm lucky enough to chair.
Was that last piece too, like through grade level alignment and having clear expectations of how ninth builds into 10th, 11th, 12th, that actually, I guess, created a connection and community within the department?
Absolutely. You know, because you can get together and have, you know, okay, we got an hour of subject area time together, and it can turn into, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, and oftentimes it's needed, where there'll be five separate, you know, or more meetings going on because my human bio teachers all got to meet because this dissection's coming up, and that's all good work. But when you can take all of those and the ninth grade teacher is hearing from the 11th grade chemistry teacher about, wow, I can't believe what I'm seeing. We've been talking about this for 5 years and the before and after. And a lot of these students are now getting to my class as a junior or a senior. And so it really does connect everybody on this mission that's not necessarily focused on the content I'm delivering in my class, but again, these academic and for us oftentimes scientific skills. So it's really cool. It makes kind of a unifies the mission in some ways.
It is cool. Let's pause, like, because I'm hearing you say the I can't believe what I'm seeing from the, I think you said 11th grade chemistry teacher down to the ninth mm-hmm. grade science teacher. The I can't believe what I'm seeing is a positive thing. Like, wow, this I can't believe what the kids are able to do. Am I hearing that correctly?
Exactly.
Well, I was going to say that's not a small point because it maybe I'm just in some interesting places, but. too often, Mitch, and it drives me nuts. What I hear is, I can't believe I'm seeing, why don't they know this? Why can't they do, mm-hmm. if their parents and the should-haves and should-not-haves and all this type of crazy thinking that screws up expectations, I bet there's something, and if you could pause for a moment, really think about it, like, how do you create the I can't believe what I'm seeing culture? Because that's special, man. That really is great, Mitch.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's knowing what I'm looking for, and really diagnosing, not looking at our incoming ninth graders and having that same conversation about middle schools, blah, blah, blah. No. Just saying, okay, here's who we have and what's realistic. If we're going to move the needle in these 4 years, let's break that down and start to scaffold that process. So that when they do get to my 11th grade class, I'm looking for these skills in that have been built or at least practiced in 9th and 10th grade. So some of that is kind of knowing what we're working on. This is a common mission would be one. And then also having the systems in place for students. And this is where Organized Binder has really helped this out with my school and department is, as I'm building those tools, the resources that either students are creating or that are given to them are captured in a way and organized in a way that they're there. You know, if they the first month or two of ninth grade were working on really, you know, skills-based strategies and how do you create a hypothesis or how do you manage data with data tables and graphs and all that that they got to know, creating the resources that they can look back to build on and keep practicing those skills in ninth grade, it's got to be there. So often what I've seen is, in not in my particular site as much, but in Organized Binder work, visiting schools around the country, is that really great lessons, really solid tools, and they're not captured in a way that they're in usable fashion that they can go back and grab. So what I like to see is in ninth grade, we're doing all this really good work, but we're also capturing it in a way that students have it available to them in ninth grade. They have it available to them in 10th grade. We have a place that we start from and build on. And then same thing in 11th grade. So it kind of connects all of those things together because it's not just a, hey, do you remember in ninth grade when your teacher talked about blah, 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 which is really important, right? To say, hey, I actually know what some of the stuff you're doing in ninth grade, because I was a part of that planning process and what we're doing here ties into this in ninth grade and this to 10th grade. But then also being able to say, put something up in the classroom or say, flip to this thing that you created or something that was given to you can really bring that all together. So again, it's kind of this unifying goal, but it's incremental and we know that. So we celebrate what we can celebrate when students get there.
You mentioned Organized Binder, so let's pause here and actually listen to the Genesis story. Tell me the story of Organized Binder starting.
Yeah, I would be honored to. That history goes back to my own, you know, experience in the classroom, and I'll tell you what, when I don't think, and I think a lot of us have had this experience, I don't think I really saw myself as a learner until I got to graduate school. And for whatever reason, it kind of synced up for me. And when I finally got into the classroom, I know that space. We all know that space, right? We went through K-12, but I immediately remembered what I felt like in the classroom. And it was really powerful. And on top of that is that, you know, I went back into the classroom after this nonprofit experience that years of working with adolescents. So the skill set that I needed to develop relationships and manage, you know, 30 or 40 kids in a classroom, I had those chops going in. That didn't intimidate me at all, no matter who was in the classroom. And I got some pretty crazy classes those first few years. And I realize now that oftentimes educators will spend 2 or 3 years just learning those skills before they start to hone the actual pedagogy and then development of what I think is super critical, this executive function and non-cognitive skills. And we look at attrition rates in our industry. I think some of it is that. It's just so overwhelming figuring out how to work with young people for some people. So I'll tell you what, that day one, I'll never forget it. Actually, the first day of school, I shut the door and turned around, and it was became so obvious, like, this is my zone. This is
That's awesome. Place.
And that's the first time I've ever felt that way in my life. Like, I just get this. Like, I'm not perfect, but I don't know why, but this makes sense to me. And the next thought in those first few months of being in the classroom was, wow, I know what it's like to be uncomfortable, but these students, and for whatever reason, those first few years, my students, my attendance rates were high, but what they brought back to class was next to nothing. Their timeliness was pretty abysmal. And it just became really clear to me that there was something I wasn't doing. And that this is all kind of back to that same mindset where you had said, like, I'm blaming the parents or what these kids can't do. It's like it's not going to help me to look at students through a deficit lens, you know, like what you don't bring to the classroom. We're going to get nowhere. I have to look at you through an asset lens. What are you bringing? And I started to get to know my students, and it was like, holy cow, like, I can't believe you're here. I mean, based on their lived experience was so radically different than anything I had ever experienced that it just became clear that I needed to be learning about them. And that's that relationship piece, but that they had all of these skills they were bringing into the classroom and that I wasn't leveraging them because they didn't look like historic or traditional academic skills. And so I was stuck there. I was like, man, there's something I'm not doing. I know these students can learn. And I was, to be honest, I was pissed. It's like, why didn't anybody talk about this in graduate school?
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is the stuff I need to know. I need to know, you know, this, all this stuff that I learned. And so I just said in kind of the, I guess the way I stumble through life, I just set my mind to it, kind of ignorance and a willingness to keep trying. I just literally started saying, okay, it just became so clear, man, that it wasn't about the content I was teaching and that I think these students could learn anything if we figure out this missing piece. And so I started iterating. Organization was a clear theme, timely, like what does it mean when class starts and being on time, and where's all your crap from yesterday? And
yeah, where is it?
Yeah, like what is going on? Like you just bring the whole backpack back, like trying to figure that out. And so to make a pretty long story shorter, I'm still going on and on here, but it was from that place that Organized Binder started to coalesce. And now, years later, I realized that it was this idea of studentness, that students for a variety of usually very valid reasons are no longer picking up the skills that many of us just kind of picked up as we went through life. And there's some research around that that's pretty clear that it's now the job of the classroom teacher or the educator, however you define that, I would say beyond the classroom, all educators, that, yeah, I have this content that is my job. I am a high school, whatever, teacher, English 9 teacher. I have to do that. That's why I'm hired. But I also need now to teach students executive function or non-cognitive or studentness, whatever term that you would like to apply to that has now become part of my job, where I think historically it was really about being a content expert and delivery was important, but oftentimes in kind of that didactic lecture environment, it's just what I do. And it's the job of the learner to evolve or adjust to get this. And we're seeing that that's not necessarily happening. And it's what's been really exciting with Organized Binder is starting work with community colleges in the last 3 years and having that conversation with the community of professors. You know, like, you can't just assume that everyone's going to get it. How can we give students exposure to all of these skills they need while maintaining your academic freedom? Keep doing what you're doing. That's important. But we also got to start addressing these skills. So long-winded answer there, but it came from my experience as a classroom teacher, getting into the classroom finally and realizing we're missing something. And man, when this thing took shape in its current form, it was a powerful moment. There was just a measurable jump, both in attendance and students being on time and enjoying class, being in class and enjoying themselves and succeeding, even if they're still struggling with the content. And that's a big thing, is giving students opportunities to be successful in the modern classroom that aren't necessarily tied to content mastery. And too often, success in the classroom is tied entirely to content mastery, such that if I'm struggling with the content, I'm less likely, or maybe there's a chance that I may not see myself as part of the academic community in a way as if I was successful with the content.
So admire this work, because, you know, I think this came naturally to me, and I saw, you know what? Yeah, I can assume that kids should know this. And again, it's that should have type of thinking we talked about earlier in the show. You know, kids should know how to do this. Mm-hmm. But what I realized, like, if I help them figure out how to know what we want them to know, not only content wise, but in terms of the skills to help them stay organized and be successful in class, more kids are successful. And that makes me a better teacher, a better educator, because more kids are getting it. Why not do that? It is a part of my job. And that just clicked for me. So I admire this work and what you do with Organized Binder. I want to get into the how in a second, but what you said really zoomed in on something, this idea of deficit versus asset lenses. And I'm just curious, there might not be an answer, but was there a moment where you realized how important that was and something that encouraged you to have the optimistic, the humane perspective that, you know, I'm going to choose to view my kids and what they bring to the table as opposed to what they are lacking? Because when we have that as teachers, leaders, it doesn't matter. You see what's wrong, you're going to get more of it. If you see what's right, you're going to get more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Not being a religious man, but there's a parable that I love when I'm working with new teachers is, look, you know, as a farmer, there's wheat and there's weeds in every field. That's just a fact. And if you're going to be an asset lens, if you're going to see the students in your room as what they bring and really admire that, and if you to spend the time to get to know them, you'll admire it. Then what I equate that to is you have to train yourself to look at the wheat. You have to focus on the wheat every day, because there's going to be weeds every day in the classroom, whether that be off-task behavior or a kid who's having a bad day or your lesson sucked or your principal is whatever. I mean, there's all these things that you can focus on, but there's always some wheat. And if you just keep focusing on that, it doesn't mean you don't address the other things. I'm not saying that either. And if those stalks of wheat are your students, there's so many stories I have of having, there was not just one epiphany. Generally speaking, I can say as I started to get to know students the first few years, and my students in particular came from, and where I teach it literally is the other side of the tracks. I was just amazed because at that time I had pretty diverse classrooms. And our classes. And I just hatched the plan that I'm going to go meet the families of my students, and not all of them. I picked a subset of students from my five classes, about 20 of them. 20
plus. Very scientific approach, by the way.
tried to get the spread, just really trying to get a fair representation. And I invited them and their parents to join this little study that I did. which required me interviewing the student one-on-one, recording that. They wrote a piece for me. And then it required the family inviting me to their home, usually over dinner, and having a conversation with me. I sent them the questions ahead of time, not unlike the questions you sent, just not same questions, but giving them some time to think about. And I just brought a little tape recorder and I would eat with the families and record these. And I wrote this whole thing up, you know, talk about overzealous new high school teacher. And I wanted to know, like, why are these students successful? I called it the studentness study. And what did they do? And there's lots that I learned from that. But what I realized as an educator, the big takeaway for me was that depending on the town I teach in, is there's literally train tracks that run down the middle. And on the east side, if you're from the east side, it's likely that either it's a migrant family, you're probably living in an apartment. Most of my students of color live there, and multiple families in one small dwelling, like 15 people in a one-bedroom apartment kind of setting. And then the next night I might be on the west side of the tracks, and my school is kind of a stone's throw from Stanford University, and Berkeley's on the other side of the bridge, and UCSF, and the whole Silicon Valley thing, all of that is, you know, you'd be in this kind of mini mansion with every kid had their own room and everybody had PhDs in the family. And I'm there to figure out why your students are successful. And the takeaway for me was, oh my gosh, you know, like, of course I get why these students are successful. And there's an interesting follow-up there, is working with the stress that comes from those students coming from the west side of the town. And that's a whole other topic. But starting to realize, man, going over to where this, an apartment and meeting with a family and everyone's only speaking Spanish, and this student is taking 3 city buses to get to my school. And so all of a sudden you see a student that shows up a minute late, and I have a thing for tardies as a classroom teacher. And all of a sudden I'm celebrating the fact that she walked through the door, because I now know where she came from. I now know that some of my students have to take a certain path, which makes it much longer to get to the city bus because of gang relations in the neighborhood. And I mean, you just start putting that all together and you're like, you know, you're so excited when they walk into class, and having a smiling face that you walk into versus a disgruntled white guy up there pissed that you didn't show up a minute earlier, still wanting you to be on time. But just seeing it through wow, I can't believe what you do to get here. And I could tell you story after story after story, but that kind of doing that little study and then getting to know my students. And then I could kind of replicate that every year as I started to get to know students and understand where they're coming from. And then the fun part as an educator, saying, okay, how do we take those assets and leverage them in an academic setting? What are those 21st century skills? Because they're important and we need to celebrate them and encourage them and grow them. So I hope I'm not too long-winded, man.
No, not at all. You know, listeners, the better leaders, like, that was a master class on connecting with your community. I'm guessing that increased family engagement. And most importantly, going back to the original question, like, what was the moment, right, that you saw kids as assets? By doing a study on the ground with the families, you developed empathy. Because from your background, you don't know what it's like to grow up where they grew up. And by meeting with families and really hearing their story, seeing where they lived, just hearing what it takes for them to be successful, that allowed you to not be the crusty old curmudgeon that gets so frustrated when a kid's late because you should be on time. Because if you value education, you'll come to class on time. If you value this class, you'd be here early in your seat. It gave you empathy so that when a student came a minute late, you celebrated that they still showed up. That is beautiful, and empathy at its best.
It's such a great experience if you're willing to embrace it. Another one that just came to mind, I was teaching summer school, and I started off the first day is teaching biology, and it's getting everyone going and setting things up. And I do, I'm probably the worst about tardies. I have a real thing about it where I, and that we could talk about that and how Organized Binder can help if you are available to be there, but sitting there and we're getting going as the first day of school. And I asked this question. I said, hey, who's taking this class to get ahead, so you don't have to take biology during the school year, and who's here because you failed it? And right then these two students walk in, and for whatever reason, and the demographics at my school tend to largely be white and Latino, and then the other ethnic groups smaller. But for whatever reason, most of the students in my class were kind of your traditional white student, which is neither here nor there. It just was. And these two students walk in, these two Latino boys, look like kind of gang affiliated, wearing the garb, saggy pants. I think one of them had a hairnet on, just kind of, you could stereotypically picture this. And they came in and sat down. And so I'm asking this question, like, who's taking, I ask it again, cause they missed it. Like who's just show of hands, who's taking the class to, you know, kind of get ahead, and who's taking it because you failed. And I kid you not, and it's still humbling to tell the story, because in my mind, I definitely pegged those two students who were late, that had a certain look to them, as someone who was remedial. And this is like straight out of the movies, because every other kid in the class raised their hand that they had failed. And the only two students that had enrolled in that class to get ahead were the two Latino boys who showed up late, and they were late because they were over at registration trying to explain why they were taking the summer school course, as it wasn't remediation. It was, I want to get ahead and do this. And they had to do something with the scheduling. And it just makes you stop and say, okay, I constantly have to check myself with these bias and check my lenses, you know, check my lenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate you being courageous and sharing that story, because it definitely shows, you know, assumptions that were made incorrectly, right, about your students. Yeah. But it taught you a valuable lesson. You're able to move forward from that. Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcast. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. We've talked about, you know, the genesis story of Organized Binder. So people, I'm sure the better listeners are trying to think like, well, how does this work, right? So can you kind of talk about that? Because you mentioned how cool it was when it all sort of came together. So how does it work? And also answer, like, how do schools get involved if they want to?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, the first thing in developing it, and I'll just kind of go back to what I had mentioned about my job as a classroom teacher. And I have this, I'm just going to use the word content. Like, this is the stuff that I'm hired to teach. I have to do this. And I knew that. I love the content that I teach, but I knew right away that this isn't in itself, this subject matter, unless a particular human being has an intrinsic interest in that subject matter. The subject by itself may or may not motivate a student to become a learner or a better learner. But that's my job. And so the design of Organized Binder is really a nod and an absolute seriousness about this, a nod to academic freedom. Like, you have to teach your content. And I'm a believer that the way you do that brings a certain culture and creates a certain environment in the classroom that's really important as the educator in the room. So first and foremost, looking at how it's used is looking, if we looked at a traditional class period or a school day, it's really looking at let's just take it from since I'm a high school teacher, we'll take it from a high school perspective, but the systems used in middle or elementary, middle, high school, and now college. But if we look at it from a high school perspective in a bell-to-bell environment, if I have a 60-minute class period, we're really trying to utilize the first few minutes and the last few minutes of class. And my experience has been that those two bookends are the historically the most underutilized class time. And if I can exploit and maximize what we're doing with that class time, I can have a profound impact on my students. So without having the system available to see, I'll try to explain kind of its most widely used iteration. And it is literally a binder, and there's a number of pages, A through H. They're all color-coded. And what the system is designed to do, I like the word ritual instead of routine or procedure, but the system is designed to ritualize the classroom in a way that promotes student achievement, and it gives them exposure to this set of skills that research and data very clearly indicate that if I embody these skills or can employ them in the classroom or in any setting, I'm more likely to be successful. But by ritualizing, what I mean by ritualizing is I want to create an environment in a classroom, in my classroom, where students know what to do to be successful before they even arrive. And if you have ever worked with special education students or EL students, I call it the EL labyrinth, that if you work with EL students in the morning and you work with them in the afternoon, there's a certain fatigue on the face of an EL student in the afternoon that they may not have in the morning. And I believe that it's navigating. If I have, let's say, seven classes in a day or five classes in a day, and each of those classes begin and end and function differently, not to mention the content being different, and I'm picking up about 60% of what's being said, and I'm understanding about 50% of what I'm reading, I'm going to spend a significant amount of cognitive energy just getting through the school day, right? I get the first period. Okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and get through that period, and I get all my stuff, and I go to my second period, and there's a different expectation. This one starts this way, and you can just imagine how much cognitive energy I'm using to navigate the school day. And so what Organized Binder does is a student shows up, they literally have a physical binder, unless you're implementing the digital version or in a digital application, I should probably say. And they just know there's these pages, and they're literally just simple pages in a binder that are color-coded, so that when you show up to class, we're on, it's called the weekly lifeline, it's page B, and it's white. And everything in an Organized Binder classroom that students have in front of them is identical to what's projected in the classroom. So I show up and that page is already projected when I walk into the classroom. So our training is really about how you implement it and not just here's what these pages are. But if you had a copy of the system in front of you, you would notice that the page in front of it is gold, which is the goals page. It's the first page in the binder. And we're on this B page, and the C page, so it's just alphabetical, is green. So I have the visual cueing of what's in front of me in the classroom. I open my binder, it's right there in front of me. And as I glance around the room, I have all of these color coding and visual reminders about what I need to do, and not in a punitive way or authoritarian way, but what I need to do to engage with the class community. Because the teacher is projecting this up in the classroom, we go through this ritual every single day. And again, we're just talking about the first few minutes and last few minutes, but every single day, it's not the same. It's identical. So that when I show up, it's like after the first couple of days, it's just like, I know what to do. And what that looks like, this is something else that's really important, is that I want to have expectations in my classroom that are so crystal clear that I can explain them without opening my mouth. And I do this, and other Organized Binder teachers do this. For example, like what it means to be on time. And this came back to the tardy thing and students showing up late. And these are students that are just posting up out in the hallway. This is not like I'm still on the bus, right? And it became clear to me that when I started teaching, I had my idea of what it meant to be on time, and I had 30 other ideas in the classroom. And unless I made it explicit what it means to be on time, and my expectation is possible, it can't be this crazy expectation that no one can achieve, then they're more likely to do it. And I stumbled upon that. Like, hey, if students know what we want them to do and what we're wanting them to do helps them be successful, they're more likely to do it. It's that gray area that, what do I do? The classic, oftentimes at schools that we work with, the first 2 or 3 minutes we ask, like, how long does it take for a class to become academic here, like to get up and going? It's often like 2 or 3 minutes. Well, I call those gray areas in our lesson plans because they're undefined space. And one of the things we like to say is, well, with Organized Binder, we're going to paint those gray areas black and white so students know exactly what to do. It's not going to take 3 minutes. It's going to take 3 seconds because we're all on board. We know what to do. And I can engage in that and do that. So students would walk into a class. This would be projected for them. And the expectation is simply to be in your seat, your assigned seat, hopefully with your binder open to this page. And so what us teachers will do is I'll tell students the first week of school, like, here's what it means to be on time to my classroom. I'll grab a binder and I'll walk out. And they're all kind of, what the, you know, where do you go? And then I walk in, I go over to an desk. Yep. I open up my binder, I point to the screen, what's projected, I point what's in front of me, and then I get up and I hand the binder back to a kid and it's like, does that make sense? Yeah, I got it, right? And that's what the system is doing. It's all those cueings built around the skills students need. So when they show up, they know what to do to be successful. It gives them chances, gives them opportunities to be successful that's not tied to the content. So I can celebrate victories just because a student has their binder. Their binder's open to the right page. They wrote the kickoff prompt down as I wanted. Any little thing that I can get to, that a boy, way to go. That looks great. Building that environment of success, and they may be struggling with the content. And that's, I don't know if I'm communicating that in a way without actually showing you the system, but it's really important that students start to have these experiences in the classroom, because for many of them, historically, they have not had successes in the classroom, and that's why they have this idea of who they are in that space. And another part of my job is to change that narrative.
Yeah. What I mean, change those. This is good. What I'm hearing you say is, like, you know, you got a system, you explicitly show kids, like you talked about painting the gray and the black and white, explicitly showing how kids would be successful, and even to a point where it becomes a ritual, right? And they don't necessarily even have to think about how to do it. And at times you can even use or avoid using language to communicate expectations. That's when you know you've got some powerful communication going on, when there's a lack of words, right? When I'm with Miriam and we can communicate something with a look, you know what I mean? And not even use words. It's like, okay, we've reached a really great, profound, intimate level. So I think that's good. You unpack that a bit for the listeners. How do schools get involved then with Organized Binder?
Easiest way, I mean, is simply reaching out to us via phone or website. And then what we typically do is try to give schools or districts or charter networks, whoever it is, enough information to have a very real conversation with the staff around, is this a good fit for us? And what that means to me is, do we acknowledge that the development of skills, habits, and mindsets is paramount to developing learners and scholars? And if so, instead of just saying, oh, okay, classroom teachers, now there's something else you have to do. By the way, you got to develop non-cognitive skills. And you got, I mean, that can be very overwhelming because I'm just trying to get through my lessons. But if we acknowledge that these are principles, guiding principles for us as an academic community, then this might be the system for us, because it doesn't require me to reinvent the wheel, and it doesn't require me to completely change the way I deliver content. I can adopt this. And if you go back to that EL student, now when that student goes from class to class to class, all of the cognitive energy that used to be spent navigating is reduced. We've reduced all that friction, and now this student has more cognitive energy to focus on the content that we're trying to learn. And as they go through the process, they're picking up these skills, whereas time management and metacognition and goal setting and all of the stuff we probably can't get into here. But so giving a staff enough of an introduction to have that conversation before we jump into a full-on training. So we're very clear about like what Organized Binder, in terms of a training, a professional learning experience, is will never ever be a one-time flash in the pan. I'm just morally opposed to the idea of this being really exciting and wow, look what it can do for kids, and we do this one day thing and then you never see us again. So it's all built around an initial training, whether that be online or in person, and 1 to 2 or more follow-ups with any participating staff, and looking at kind of like a 3-year vision. So to answer your question, there is definitely an initial reaching out and saying, hey, we're interested in this. And then we kind of roll up our sleeves and make sure it's a good fit, and then get to work.
Love it. Well, we're entering the final round of the interview. These are rapid fire questions. So answers 30 seconds or less. Okay.
Oh boy.
What okay, is, I'll do my yeah. What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
I can only choose one. Pedagogy of the Oppressed, Paulo Freire. If you want to really know the basis of where asset lenses, in my opinion, were born in education, you have to read Freire, Pedagogy of the Oppressed.
I second that. Foundational book in my life in college. So you gotta read it if you're an educator. Mitch, what do you do for fun?
I hang out with my 2 daughters. That's top now. I have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old, Vivian and Olive. I love surfing. I love running. I'm an outdoorsy guy. I love playing the guitar and I love tinkering and building stuff.
If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Welding, hands down.
I love that answer. Welding, hands down. Why welding?
I don't know, man. I haven't committed the time to do it because I know it's not like a one-time class. I just love welding. I don't know, like build something that you can't break. That's cool.
Absolutely. What message would you put on all school marquees around the globe if you could for just a single day?
Assuming that the students are seeing it and reading it, that we believe that you matter. And that's why we're here.
Love it. We believe that you matter. And that's why we're here. Okay, this question you can expound on a bit. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school? What would be your top 3 priorities?
First and foremost, staff, hands down. It would all start with figuring out who to hire. That would have to be absolutely congruent with the vision, the stated vision of the school. So in assembling a staff, that would have to be proclaimed, like, here's what we're doing. And does this align with you? Gosh. And then I would work like hell to build the most effective but sustainable model. And if I could elaborate there, one troubling trend in education, I don't know if trend is the right word, but there's some really exciting things happening. And I'm just not convinced they're sustainable, meaning that they may be built on teachers' backs that are teaching all day and then after school responsibilities and then there into the evening, and it's incredible work, but the turnover is too rapid. So trying to figure out what that vision is, who's hired, and then build a sustainable model so that those educators are there for the long run, which is when student lives really get transformed, when you have that time.
Well, Mitch, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Gosh, parting words of advice. I would say just remember that students are more likely to be successful when we take the development of skills and habits and mindsets as seriously as we take content and grades and standardized testing. Until we take the development of those parts of the human as serious as we do everything else, I think we're going to continue to struggle. And the best way to get a hold of me is you can get a hold of me through the Organized Binder website, which is just organizedbinder.com. Pretty simple. Go through the contact link and say, hey, I want to talk to Mitch. And that'll eventually make my inbox. I'm just Mitch@organizedbinder. Those are probably the two easiest ways. And if you prefer phone, you can always go go to the website and hit the contact tab, and there's phone numbers there as well.
Well, better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Mitch. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Mitch in the search bar. Show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Mitch, thank you for sharing your leadership insights, being a wonderful guest, and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Daniel. This was really fun. I appreciate it.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.